The opinions expressed are those of the show hosts and may not necessarily be of any company in which the show hosts may represent. Hello, everybody. Welcome to podcast number 376. While I intend to give Fortra, Fish Labs, and Trend Micro the time they need to get it out to their communities, I realize that we're not quite doing this in the order that I intended. I should really be releasing the webinar in July 1st, but we're going to be releasing the one in August 1st. But it's been several months since both were. It's been at least 2 months, give or take, for the webinar you're about to hear, and at least 3 months for the one you will hear on the next podcast. Today, the 2023 Impersonation Lookalike webinar, which is a full hour in length, and this one comes to us from Fortra Fish Labs. And of course, Fortra now owns Fish Labs, and they've got their own products now. Although Fish Labs continues to do what they do, and it's all sort of one big house now, if you will. My email and iMessage is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. And I do tend to play these podcasts, these tech podcasts anyway, on the independent channel after they are released. But we will probably start doing is playing these podcasts after TSB, if there is one to be played. That way, you get a whole bunch of tech in one day. Now, this particular webinar was very, very interesting. And we know that domains are bought all the time. And we know that are new TLDs all the time. And so, while we intend to give the people who do the webinars first dibs, the information that we are presenting to you is going to be of interest to you, because you may be seeing these, and while I wish we could play the webinar right after we get a copy of it, we want to try and be cool with them by playing them 30 to 60 days or longer after first being played. In fact, one network said you cannot play our contact until 90 days after airing. So I want to be friendly to those who are doing this work and getting it out to everyone, and then we can go ahead and do that. My email address is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. That's T-E-C-H at menvi.org. And this file is exactly 1 hour in length that you're going to be hearing. And we hope that you will enjoy it as much as we have listening to it. And until next podcast, I will see everybody later.
All right, it's the top of the hour. We're going to begin. Hello, and thank you for joining the webinar. So I want to say also good morning, good evening, good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world. Today's webinar, we're going to be talking about the 2023 Domain Impersonation Report. And before we get started, we have a couple of housekeeping notes. You have been muted. If you have any questions, please add them to the Q&A. We will answer those at the end. And we also are recording this webinar, and we will send all of the registrants the recording 24 hours after the webinar. So today we have our experts, Elise Newman. She is the Senior Director of Security Operations at Fortra. We also have Eric George. He is the Director of Solution Engineering here at Fortra as well. And they're going to talk all about domain impersonation, the key findings from our report. And with that, I will hand it over to you.
All right. Thank you, Tricia. So both Elise and I come to Fortra by way of acquisition of a company called Fish Labs, who has been a leader in the digital risk protection space for well over a decade. And if you're not familiar with the phrase digital risk protection, don't worry. We're going to get you familiar with that soon enough. So soon after we joined Fortra, we were quickly merged with the Agari and ClearSwift capabilities under Fortra, because those are both experts in their own right in the email protection space. Fish Labs does digital risk protection, but we also do email protection as well. And that's where a lot of the information today is going to come from in our domain impersonation work under digital risk protection, as well as our work in the email protection space. So, and you know, we were combined with Agari and ClearSwift because, you know, our services, our offerings complemented each other. We could share data, we could share capabilities, and this, you know, really illustrates one of the primary initiatives of Fortra, in that they're bringing together world-class individual solutions to create a stronger unified offering. So if we look at the overall portfolio that we have here, you can see that we weren't the only acquisitions going on. Over the last 10 years, Fortra's really been selecting many of the best cyber companies in the world. Our little area of Fortra falls underneath the infrastructure protection and data security suite within Fortra. We realize those are both big targets, right? Attackers are continually looking to compromise your infrastructure and the data that it protects and transmits. Best practice has always dictated a defense in depth or layered approach, and Fortra wants to be able to help with as many layers as possible. So our data security capabilities really help to enable you to track and secure your data regardless of where it lives or how it's shared. And the infrastructure protection capabilities provide assistance with vulnerability identification in response to those vulnerabilities. So many of these capabilities can be sold alone or combined together to kind of create a unified solution there, and they can all be complemented by our managed services and or automation capabilities, which can really help to add bandwidth and expertise to your already taxed teams. So with that, let's drill into digital risk protection, what it is and how it relates to domain impersonation. So with DRP, you know, if we think about kind of how we've historically looked at information security, we think about things like endpoint protection. We think about firewalls. We think about network monitoring. All those kind of initiatives there, you know, maybe web proxies, email gateways, et cetera. All those components there are really meant at protecting the infrastructure or protecting the castle. Whereas if we switch our focus to digital risk protection, we're talking about threats that live or emanate from outside of the enterprise. They're outside of the infrastructure of which that the organization is being targeted. So they reside on social media platforms, or they reside within mobile application stores or on the surface web, deep web or dark web. So not areas that organizations have visibility into or control over. Next slide, please. And just so you kind of set the stage here, DRP isn't just a Fortra or a Fish Labs term. It is recognized by advisors or consultants across the industry, researchers, working groups, et cetera. Our partners use the term And of course, our competitors use the term as well. It generally is a good idea to kind of define, if you're talking to someone about digital risk protection, exactly what they're talking about and what you're talking about, to make sure you're on the same page. That can relate to different things to different people. However, it generally focuses on the external misuse or outright malicious use of brand or other kind of organizational specific assets. And some of the common threats that are addressed by digital risk protection include a pretty wide range of threat types. So we're typically kind of the most known threat type would be credential theft phishing. Those lookalike login pages that are attempting to steal the credentials of users for resale or account takeover. However, there's many more types. You could have social media impersonations. You could have lookalike domains is what we're going to be talking about a lot today. Counterfeit advertisements, copyright or counterfeit mobile applications. The threats can be located on many different platforms, and we also often see them kind of play together. You know, we often see social pages that promote a phishing attack. So, you know, it requires kind of a wide range of visibility and capability outside of the network there. All of them leverage some sort of impersonation, and of course, that's what we're going to focus on today. So this data, as I indicated earlier, comes from our work in protecting organizations against lookalike domains, as well as the analysis of emails that use lookalike domains themselves or kind of spoofing of lookalike domains there. And in that work, we came up with the following key findings that we're going to dive into on the next few slides here. So we saw that the average brand was targeted by at least 40 lookalike domains per month in the first half of 2023. So when we say average brand, we're generally talking about medium to large enterprises, and it spans multiple industries. Of course, financial industries or the financial services industry is very heavily targeted, but we see a wide array of different organizations outside of that: healthcare, insurance, kind of manufacturing, legal, law, et cetera. They really don't discriminate in that regard. Of those lookalike domains that we looked at and analyzed and classified, 77% of the ones that we classified as malicious hosted credential theft phishing sites. Now, those would be phishing sites that target either enterprise employees or they could be targeting consumer. Another notable trend that we saw was the prevalence of country code TLDs. Now, we're going to get into a little bit more about what CCTLDs exactly are and kind of the data around that. But for the first time, we saw them surpass both legacy TLDs, such as .NET, .com, .org, and the newer kind of vanity TLDs. Finally, we saw that more than 60% of spoofed email display names impersonated a well-known brand. Now, this probably isn't that much of a surprise, but it does bear pointing out. And the brands that we saw were typically either well-known brands that the attackers know that most of us leverage, or we're seeing kind of more and more of a trend of attackers doing their research and using brands specific to that organization and the individual being targeted. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Elise to dive into some of these findings.
Thanks, Eric. Hi, everybody. So on this first slide, we talk about the number of lookalike domains per brand. And in the first half of 2023, as Eric mentioned, we had about 40 lookalike domains per brand per month. And I think it's important to note that a client can have more than one brand, and most of our clients do. So if you have multiple brands, that would be 40 per brand. So if you had two or three, you'd double it, triple it. The numbers can get pretty high depending on the number of brands that you have. There's a couple of other factors that affect the number of domains that target you. Number one is the generality of your name. If you have a common word in your brand, that will show up a lot more in domains if it's part of other words. And that's where the categorization of content review is really important. And then secondly, how prevalent and how much you're targeted as an actual for malicious intent. So the numbers, you know, started out in January about 37%, dipped quite a bit in February to about 27, and then steadily increased to May. And then we see a huge jump from May to June, about 120% increase to about 74 domains per lookalike, lookalike domains per brand. And that can be attributed to specific industries that we saw were targeted, which was technology, retail, manufacturing, and financial institutions, as well as a spike in the lookalike domain targeting of the top three webmail providers. Then we look at each of the domains that come in and we determine what's going on with that. And that's how we give it a threat type. And here you'll see the three threat types are mentioned, but there's actually four. The fourth one is non-relevant content. So a lot of the domains that come into our system, 86% of the domains that come into our system have no relevant content on them at the time. They're a parking page, a monetized link page, they say no content available, or they don't display any content. Now, while that is a big number, the important part, there's two important factors to this. Number one, content could come up within the next 24 hours to the next year. And so it's really important that even though a domain has no content, that we continue to monitor for content changes. And that's what we do. We review domains daily to see if any content changes. And if it does, we recategorize it and it then will fall into one of the other buckets you see here. The other important note of domains that don't resolve is you can still be attacked by a domain that doesn't have any content on it through a BEC attack, which is a business email compromise attack. And what that is once a domain has an MX record associated to it, it can send an email anywhere with that domain. So while they may never use the content of it, they can still email within your organization or on behalf of your organization using the impersonation domain to various people. What we have seen is invoices sent to third parties, people pay invoices that obviously it's not coming from the legitimate company. And also within the organization, emails will be sent to the to somebody in the finance department saying you've got to send money really quickly, look like it's coming from the CEO, have a very similar domain, person doesn't think, they send the money, and there you go, you've lost that amount of money. So while content is vitally important, it's also important to look at what's going on with the domain and if it's being used if it has an MX record and being used in potential email scams. So the other three categories are branded content, redirects, and malicious. Branded content is anything that hosts content related to your organization. It's not nefarious. It can be logos, it could be industry terms, it could be an industry-specific page, not necessarily the content may not be necessarily targeting your brand, but the domain itself is. Then there's redirects, which can you click on the domain and it automatically redirects to a third party. Excuse me, a third-party page, a competitor website. Sometimes it even goes back to your corporate site as well. And then the last and most important and concerning is the malicious content. And this is broken down into phishing, counterfeit, cryptocurrency scams, and malware. In the first one you'll see here, this is branded content, which made up the majority of the domains we found with content, 53%. And as you can see in the example here, you don't see the domain, but the domain would have the automotive name in it, and then it has all this industry terms on it, and these verify by Trusted Guardian. This one doesn't have a logo on it, but sometimes they will have logos as well. So this becomes more of a branded question. Do you want your brand associated to this page? Is this something that you're okay with? And if not, then it is something you may want to consider removing off the internet. The next one is redirects, only making up about 36.3%, second highest of the content. Again, as I mentioned before, redirects can go to competitor website, which is what you definitely don't want, to have your brand directed to a competitor. It sometimes goes to your own website. And then in this case, the domain had a brand name in it and it redirected to this mail website, very cute cats, but not exactly where you want your domain to be going or your brand, people to associate you with this. And then of course, malicious content. So while this only made up 10.3% of the lookalike domain volume, it obviously has the biggest impact to your organization. Phishing made up almost 77% of the malicious content found. Not surprising that even though phishing has been around for decades, it's still very prevalent. People still fall for it. It's very lucrative for the cyber criminals, and unfortunately continues to get better. They're finding new blocking mechanisms that organizations like ours have to avert and be able to counteract. So while, you know, I've been in this industry now for almost 20 years, I remember seeing phishing attacks that I couldn't believe anybody fell for. They were so simple and they looked like a child put it together. Now they become a lot more sophisticated, but there's still people falling for it all the time. So it will always continue to be very high on the list of malicious content because it is very lucrative for the cyber criminals. The next is cryptocurrency scams. This is fairly new. In the last couple of years, we've been seeing these. Makes up about 20% of the activity. Also very concerning because it does go after Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. It can be a login page similar to what you see on a phishing site. Looks much like the crypto site that you go to. Or it will ask for your QR code and people will provide that information, unfortunately, and then their cryptocurrency will be stolen as well as their credentials. The next is counterfeit sites. Also about 2 years old, we've been seeing these counterfeit sites showing up in domains. And what these look like, they're third-party sites. They have a look and feel of the corporate site. They use logos. They often take images from the websites. The biggest thing to note, though, is the prices will be ridiculously low. So they're trying to incentivize people to go on the site, buy something at a really low cost. For example, a ring that normally is in the thousands and is now on sale for $199, big blowout sale, things like that are definitely big indicators that it's a counterfeit site. In some cases, people will actually get a product. They will pay. They will go pay through their credit card or PayPal. And in many cases, they will actually get a product back. It's just, you know, a fake or something not exactly what they were expecting. And in other cases, unfortunately, they do get nothing. And then they will reach out to the retailer and ask, what's going on? Why did I get this? Or why didn't I get that? And that's when they'll find out that we're actually the wrong counterfeit site. And then the last is malicious activity. And while this is low at about 1.4%, and it always remains fairly low, it has been consistently on our charts, on our radar, again, for decades. Never goes away, not the number one, and never has been and never will be, but still continuously, you know, you'll find these malicious pages that will try to get you to download information. It kind of decreased a lot more when BEC attacks became more prevalent because that was easier to send emails with stuff to download as opposed to just directly going to a third-party site. And here's just an example of a domain with a phishing site. So the domain name will have the client's name in it. As you can see, it will have a logo, it will have the username and password. So at that point, you're giving your credentials. You log in and you know you think you're going to your banking site, you're not. So it's definitely really important that you're looking at the right domains before you click on provide any username and password. Okay, and this next section is still me, so I hope you're okay hearing my voice continuously. This is an analysis of top level domains for Q2 specifically, but we are gonna look at it from a quarter of a quarter review. So top-level domains used in phishing campaigns did fluctuate a lot in the first half of 2023. One of the biggest things was the reduction of registration of free domain registries, specifically Freenom. These were halted and decreased our free registration that we saw phishing attacks on 80% quarter over quarter. So that had a huge impact to the free domains. That doesn't mean it reduced the number of phishing attacks because the attackers still went then to pay for the domains. And as you can see, all the top 10 are all domains that they would have to pay for. Interesting part of Q2 is many of these domains that you're seeing here, the .com, .net, that list, are actually new to the top 10, notably the .app and .shop. These are two that are new GTLDs and new to the top 10. And they had massive increases from Q1. The top 10 TLDs are made up of three groups, C, ccTLDs, legacy gTLDs, and new gTLDs. The first time, as Eric mentioned earlier, this is the first time since reporting on this data that ccTLDs, which is country code, top level domains, anything that's specific to a country, .ca, .uk, .us, and in this list, .pl, .co, .id, and .fr. This is the first time this has made up the majority of the abuse at nearly 46% of the overall volume. And this is a huge change that we haven't seen before. .pl had a growth of 250%. And .fr 700% increase from Q1. So it had a large jump. ccTLDs are more difficult to detect because they're not publicly accessible like the gTLDs, the general top level domain. Zone files are publicly accessible to anybody, where ccTLDs are not, and they're governed by countries or organizations in the countries, and they those governments determine whether or not they're going to provide that information. So organizations like ours, we need to build relationships with those registries to get that information, and not everybody can obtain it. As we continue to build on that ccTLD, if a new one comes out, we go reach out and we get that information from the providers. But this is not publicly accessible, so it does have a higher impact on the time it takes to detect a phishing campaign on a ccTLD for those organizations that are not covered and are not able to find the ccTLD coverage. And then the last section was legacy gTLDs. These were abused less than they typically are, 18.5% less than Q1. However, they still make up 41% of the volume, and .com still being number one, always stays at number one, did have a decrease of 8.5%, but still, you know, still remains number one. .org went from number two to number seven, which is interesting because that one decreased quite a bit from Q1 to Q2. The things of note here are, as I mentioned before, .app and .shop, which jumped from 6th to 10th spot. They were not in the top 10 in Q1. So it's really interesting to see how those ones have increased and how they affect phishing and counterfeit for sure. Fortra also observed a shift in TLD usage in Q2, with more incidents containing common term TLDs like .info, .click, .app, .shop, .work, and .online. So people are falling more for those ones that have common terms in them. Also, what we noticed in May, Google introduced 7 new TLDs, .zip, .dat, .phd, .esq, .foo, and .mov. And of those, while they're insignificant in volume thus far, we did find that we had 2 phishing campaigns with .zip and 18 with .dad. If you go to the next slide, I'll show you the examples of those attacks. These are the 2 .zip attacks. In the first attack, the cybercriminal registered a .zip lookalike domain, redirecting from a large social media organization to a third-party actor-owned website. It also had an HTTPS, which is a SSL certificate on the domain, and the organization's brand names and brand name was on there, as well as using business appeal in the domain to convince the victims of its legitimacy. In the second attack, the cybercriminals used .zip lookalike domains to send the victim to a cred theft phishing page. They also used an SSL cert, HTTPS, and language associated to typical target the brand. And then once you got to the actual phishing page, there were images, language, and brand associated with that target. So while this .zip is not significant just yet, we've already seen some examples of it, and we do expect to see further examples of this going forward. It's only been a few months. We do have an article coming out about this, so if anyone's interested in more information on these, please feel free to reach out, and we can send you that article. Eric, back to you.
All right. Thanks, Elise. So just about everything Elise was kind of going through there is produced by our Digital Risk Protection Service, that lookalike domain monitoring for large brands and large to medium-sized organizations. And the work we do around that. Now we're going to pull out a little bit and talk about email attacks that leverage domain impersonation. So here at Fortra, we analyze millions of enterprise targeted email attacks. And from that analysis came the data that you see on the screen here. So we can see that also here, very prevalent as before, the majority of the attacks leverage well-known brands. However, you can see a significant amount of attacks leverage a well-known, often high-ranking individual within the enterprise as well. More and more, we're seeing the brands and the individuals that are leveraged are specific to the individual or the organization that's being targeted. So the attackers are doing the research, and they're just looking to increase their overall effectiveness. I say this in just about every talk I do. I think that the attackers are running a business. if they get caught, if their attacks don't work, it hurts their bottom line. So they put just a little bit more work in on the forefront, and they're using some of the automated and intelligent tools out there today to kind of supplement that work, and they're creating much more craftier lures. So we can see a smaller proportion here for lookalike domains. However, these are significant and important to track because they can often represent a more advanced attack. For these attacks, the attacker has gone through the trouble of creating a lookalike domain. They've done the prep, the research to know what domain would work and what domain is out there and would make sense. They also have control of the mail infrastructure, the sending infrastructure. So deliverability on those emails tends to be a little bit better. They don't get caught as often in spam filters there. So the exact method used by the attacker to impersonate varies. Most leverage spoofing within the from field of the email, because the attacker just kind of relies on the fact that that's all that most people look at, or if they even do kind of examine that. But other compromised or other common tactics include compromised accounts and or the lookalike domains that we mentioned earlier. So on the next couple of slides, we have a few examples here. The first one is the most common type of attack we see targeting enterprise organizations. They're phishing attacks or other type of lure attacks that leverage one of the more prevalent Office suite tools there. Microsoft, probably no surprise that leads the pack there by and far. Here we see the brand leveraged in the domain and the from field, as well as in the subject line. So pretty heavy play to that brand there. While the attackers know that it's good odds that most of us use one of these leading Office tool suite providers, such as Microsoft or Google, like I said before, they're doing more and more work to kind of use specific business applications or tools that industry or that organization is using, and they're spoofing notifications that are directly from those tools and things of that nature. So much, much more targeted. This type of lure you see here would be typically used for an account takeover attack or to deliver a malicious payload that could bring in keyloggers, ransomware, et cetera. The next example we have is a individual display named Imposter, where they were leveraging the impersonation of a high-ranking company official. We can see here in the subject line that the attacker is subtly trying to create a sense of urgency. It's no surprise that most lures play to some sort of emotion there to elicit a response. This type of attack often plays with a call to action. So there's often not a URL or an attachment associated with this type of attack. Instead, the attacker is asking the targeted user to take an action, provide some information, or make a phone call or send an email. And they're harder to block because there's not those indicators in the email. So you really need some sort of good advanced phishing solution that can focus on the language and kind of detect these attacks from that aspect. So now that we've seen, how the impersonations are being leveraged by the attackers, let's talk a little bit about what we can do about them. We here at Fortra, myself, Elise, and many others from our teams regularly talk to clients and other organizations who deal with us day to day. Many of them either don't have any DRP protection, or they're just getting started, or maybe they have some limited capability. You know, just about everybody has email protection nowadays, but it's just starting to kind of get in the realm of the advanced phishing that's really focused on the impersonation attacks. And when we're talking about detecting kind of these attacks in the DRP sense, we come across these challenges here that we hear from organizations. They may hear of these attacks, these impersonations. They hear of them from employee reports or customer reports, but they don't have visibility to detect the attacks proactively. There is some intelligence and some open source tools that you can use, but that's only going to give you a limited set of visibility into the impersonation attack that might reside outside of your network that's leveraging your brand or employees or MVPs from your organization. If the organizations we're talking to do have that visibility, even in a limited fashion, they're going to see a good bit of noise. There's a lot of, as I mentioned, open source tools out there or other solutions that are more tool driven. They can produce some findings, but there's going to be a lot of false positives, a lot of irrelevant data in that. And also the data is not always enriched in a meaningful way. There's not screenshots necessarily, or context or classification, things of that nature. If the organization we're talking to has some capabilities in either one of these areas and they find the attack and they get down to getting context and kind of getting exactly what they need, doing mitigation can be tough as far as takedown. And when we talk about takedown or mitigation, we're talking about maybe getting a social media profile that's impersonating your CEO taken offline. Or maybe we're talking about a lookalike domain that's hosting content or not hosting content, but sourcing malicious emails. Doing mitigation on that, I'm quite positive that just about anybody on this call could probably go through figuring out how to get something taken offline. But doing that at scale, it's going to take you time if you start from zero to do it just for one. But if you have any type of scale, and oftentimes that's going to happen rather quickly when the attackers start attacking you, is they're going to kind of ramp it up very quickly there because they're using automated tools. So doing this at any type of scale can be pretty difficult there and tie up resources. And that comes into play with all of it, right? We all have experts on our teams who could do this work, but their to-do list is already packed, right? And they don't have time to kind of take away from their day jobs and go into doing this type of work. So it often helps to kind of either partner with someone to do this, or, you know, at least have a plan kind of set up to address these threats when they come up. And we'll go into that a little bit later on the next couple slides. Here at Phish Labs, we do follow a kind of a framework that can be easily copied. I'll cover that a little bit on the next slide, and then we'll drill into it. What we use here for all of our digital risk protection services, as well as some of our email protection services, actually, when we get right down to it, is collection, curation, and mitigation. This is how we know where to focus our efforts and determine where our gaps are, and then kind of work to build those out. Now, we've been doing this for well over a decade, so it's very mature. And we're going to go into this a little bit on how we do it specifically for lookalike domains on the next slide. But essentially what we're doing is we're pulling in as much data as possible in the collection phase that's relevant. We're going to go through that data, clean it up, find the items that are meaningful, add context, add screenshots, et cetera. And then we're going to have a process in place to own the outcome, do mitigation and or ongoing monitoring. And Elise is now going to jump into how we do that for lookalike domains.
Okay, so on the collection side, we talked a lot earlier about the GTLDs and CCTLDs, and I mentioned how difficult it can be to get the CCTLDs, but we do collect them and the GTLDs for newly registered domains. Then we also look at new SSL cert registrations for key terms, and then pivoting on existing incidents, new incidents, as well as proactive processes to look at domains that could potentially be coming down the pipe, and making sure we're adding that all to our review and having it added to our collection. The next part is, you know, what sets us apart is the ability to score that data And we're not just looking for exact matches, we're looking for fuzzy matches as well, because a lot of times they'll switch terms around, you know, they'll switch letters around in the word bank, they'll do B-N-A-K, things like that. So we have to be able to find and determine all of those and make sure we're scoring them appropriately so that our teams can review it. It's also important that we have safe lists from our clients so that we don't review and don't bring in any domains that belong to the clients. So we do ask that our clients give us a safe lists and to continue to update us with anything that they register going forward. And then we automatically remove those from our list to review. And then the next part of that is to review the results and the content. So as I mentioned before, 86% of the incidents don't resolve. So, you know, we still have to look at every single one to see if it's resolving or not. And then those that do have content on it, we categorize it. Now, I talked about those four groups earlier, but we actually use very specific categories, such as phishing, counterfeit, related to your organization, unrelated to your organization, things like that, that make it very specific for our clients to be able to determine what they're looking at when they see a domain that has content on it. And then after that, it goes into an incident. And in that incident, we now have enrichment data as well, which includes the country that it's hosted in, the hosting provider, the registrar. We try to pull as much WHOIS information as possible. Obviously, with GDRP, we are limited to what we can pull. If there is no WHOIS information, it won't be there. But we try to add as much enrichment data to each incident as possible to help with our mitigation, and also to give our clients the ability to look at that and see what's going on there, and also helps with our correlation of incidents going forward. Then the last part that Eric mentioned was mitigation. So we have what's called our incident handling process, where we meet with our clients when we first become a client, and obviously this can change over time, and we talk through each incident type and determine whether or not the clients want us to automatically start mitigation when these things become active. Typically, that includes phishing attacks, counterfeiting, cryptocurrency scams, and malware, the four that we talked about in the malicious. But then there's, you know, the gray area, the branded content, where it could have a logo, but that doesn't mean it's malicious. So those can be categorized as requires approval, where the client will then provide us with information whether or not they want us to work on the takedown or not. So either we can do it automatically, or it can be something that the client determines we should do after. It's important to note with taking down domains that we, not us, the registrars, will not remove domains without content. So just because a domain name has your brand in it is not enough for the registrars to actually take action on it, which is why we have to continue monitoring for content changes. And as soon as we see something change on the domain, we'll update the threat type, which will then kick into the incident handling process and either automatically start the takedown if that's what's been determined by the threat type, or we'll go to requires approval where you can go look and determine whether or not you want that site to be taken down, and then we'll start the mitigation that way. The other point of note is MX records. We talked about this before as well. Really important that we continue to monitor for MX records, because it may not happen right when an incident is, a domain is found. So as soon as an MX record is determined and is found by our systems, the client will get notified of that. We recommend that our clients, as soon as they get the notification, block that domain from coming into their system so that they can't get that, and a BEC attack cannot reach them from that perspective, because the content may never go live, but there is an MX record, so now there can be an email sent from that domain. And we also monitor WHOIS domain data as well. So where do you go from here? And this is what Eric was kind of talking about earlier, is as an organization, you know, your organization, not ours, there are different threats that hit you every day. There's different levels of what can be determined by your organization, who's involved in stakeholders. So when you look at this, we've been focusing a lot on domain monitoring, obviously, for this webinar, but there are other threats that could be coming against you, like account takeovers, brand protection, social media protection, data leak, and executive protection. And these are things, as an organization, you need to look at individually, determine what's important to you, what's happening within your organization. Is it something that you're being reactive to, or is it something that you want to be proactive to? You haven't seen this yet, but you want to make sure that if it does happen, you're already being protected in some way. Really important is what stakeholders are involved in your organization for each of these. And, you know, interestingly enough, I've been in this business for a long time, and I have seen where you think it's going to be something that's going to go to legal, a different organization, it goes to security, or should go to security, but goes to legal. And every organization is different. So it's, you know, while we're happy we're happy to help guide and give you what we think is best practices, which we will do, it's definitely something within your organization that you need to discuss internally and determine what each department is involved in and what threats, who are the stakeholders involved in each of those threats. And then, of course, to look at what your current situation is. So do you have a vendor for domain monitoring, or is it something you're doing, you're trying to do your takedowns on your own? Is your legal team doing all your takedowns? Do you have any capabilities at all? Are you even looking at some of these threats? Is it something you've even considered? So again, not everybody looks at every type of threat, and not every department knows exactly what to look for. So it definitely needs to be a company-wide review and discussion, because there are different stakeholders involved in different parts of this. And the brand protection side is typically more legal and marketing, so they may not be as concerned from a security perspective, but definitely concerned from a brand perspective. And that's where something like a domain with a logo on it would be a big concern for somebody in the marketing branding department, but not necessarily on the security side. And again, it's really important that everyone kind of start to understand that every stakeholder has a different level of priority. Look at what that is and determine what the best next steps are for your organization.
All right. So before we close out, we thought we'd do a quick overview of a topic that's been getting plenty of attention. You know, it's really been around for a long time, but over the last few years, it's been getting much, much more attention with some of the recent advances. It relates to the detection. We bring it in here because it relates to the detection of social engineering attacks that leverage impersonation. If you yourself are developing defenses against impersonation, or, you know, if you're working with a partner who is using data science, then you're going to want to be familiar with some of the basic terms with that, so you can kind of understand what the capabilities are and know what questions to ask and things of that nature. So, you know, first of all, you know, how do we define when we say AI and ML, how are those defined and how do they relate? So when we say machine learning or ML, it's an application of AI that essentially enables systems to learn and improve from experience without being explicitly programmed. So it really focuses on developing computer programs that can access data and use it to learn for themselves. These programs, I'm kind of using some air quotes there, are commonly called models. So a couple terms that apply to that world here on the screen. First up is featured engineered models. So the word feature in the world of AI and ML is any measurable input that can be used in one of these machine learning modules. It's a feature about the data. We could kind of look at it like variables. So if, as an example, if we're going to create a model predicting someone's health, and we would use things, you know, we would look at a data set about those people, and we would see criteria like age, weight, if that person exercises, et cetera. Those important features about that data set would be called the features of that model. So pretty easy to look at a data set about people and figure out what criteria you need to use in the model to determine the outcome. However, you know, when we're looking at advanced threats, emails, domains, et cetera, having experts that are not only familiar with data science, but also familiar with that domain, that specific threat domain, to kind of work on those models and make sure they're built out correctly there, are crucial. So having a featured engineered model, or a model that's kind of run off of the right features, makes the model, you know, work more efficiently, and it makes the outcome of that model much more accurate. Next up would be neural networks. So basically, this technology helps computers think and learn like humans. So if we think about how we learn and how we've been doing it all our lives, we recognize patterns. We kind of take an action and see the outcome and then learn from that. We, you know, a lot of flexibility in there. Whereas if we look at historically how computers have learned, it's very logic driven, right? So it's very and or, if then, if this happens, then do this, et cetera. There's not a lot of flexibility in there. And that's what neural networks does, is it brings that flexibility into the computer learning. It's built so it doesn't have to use specific logic. It's able to look at data, recognize patterns, and then generate outcome. Exactly how neural networks do that is pretty far out of the scope of this webinar. We'd need a lot more time, and I'd need to bring in another couple of experts to kind of walk through that. But there's a ton of information out there about any or all of these topics if you're interested in learning more. Large language models, at the simplest form, a language model is, in its most generic sense, it's a type of AI that's trained to understand and generate human language. It takes a data set and it uses algorithms to predict characters or words that's based on the input that's given into the model. So a large language model is essentially the same thing. It's just using a much, much, much larger data set, think scrapes of the internet, and much more complex algorithms. So that's where the technology we've heard of much lately, ChatGPT, OpenAI, BERT, all use this technology. Very much associated with NLP. It's actually a subset of natural language processing. And kind of a real-world example of how this can be used in threat detection, it can be used really good to kind of pick out specific language use as well as classifying that language use. For example, classifying the intent of a subject line, or maybe looking at display names for indication that there's impersonation of individual or brand names, but not needing to know those individuals or brand names beforehand. So coming real handy there. Finally, with ensembles, that one's kind of the easiest to explain at a high level. It basically says better together, right? So any two or even 10 models are going to be better than the outcome of one alone. So what ensembles do is kind of take the output of multiple machine learning models, consolidate that, and come out with a overall consolidated output. We have specific models that do very specific functions. If you're running a threat through those models, then you're going to want to kind of look at the overall judgment of those models to make the overall outcome. And that's what ensembles do. They basically combine models together. So again, this was just meant to be a 101 type overview. As I mentioned, there's no shortage of good content out there on the internet for all of this. As you can imagine, it's pretty easy to get in the weeds on this topic, but it's just like anything else. There's basic courses, you start there, and before you know it, you can have at least a low-level understanding of how things work and the key terms and phrases involved. So with that, I'll hand it back off to Tricia to take us out.
Okay, thanks, Eric and Elise. That was a great presentation, and we're going to take some questions now. So if anyone has questions about what you just heard or saw or the report, please feel free to add those questions into the questions box. And we do have a few that have already come in. So we're going to go ahead and get started on that. But please add yours if you think of any. So I have the first question is, what is your success rate, I guess, in getting domain imposters offline?
I'll take that one. So it depends. So the first, and the reason it depends is because it depends if it's what the content is that's being hosted. So it's not just about the domain, but the content. So our success rate, if it's malicious, which we talked about, phishing, counterfeit, malware, or cryptocurrency, is about 90%. So it's a very high takedown rate because it is malicious. We do have some ISPs we have issues with regarding more so on the counterfeit side. Phishing tends to be 100%. Counterfeit cryptocurrency tends to be closer to 95, 100%. But it's more counterfeit because it is, to some ISPs, it is more of a brand issue, even though that's not how we consider it and not how our clients consider it. So that does bring it down to about 90%. But when it's just a brand, like a logo on the page or a reference on the page, that is lower. It's about 65 to 70% because not all domain registrars will suspend the domain or take it down because they don't believe necessarily that it's anything concerning. So there is a little bit of a lower rate there, but we do try our hardest to get everything down as quickly as possible. But of course, the bigger stuff, the most concerning nefarious stuff does come down.
Great. We do have another question that came in. And let's see. Do you ever see social media being used in conjunction with imposter domains as part of these attacks?
So I'll take this one as well. What we've seen very prevalently in the last few years is with the counterfeiting side of the house, where a lot of these domains are being posted on ads through social media sites, so social media ads, and they're targeting these sites, and then when you click on the ad, you go to these third-party sites. So while some of them we find actually are not domain, they don't actually have the brand in it, we do find a lot of them through the social media ads that in the social media ad, it will reference the brand, the domain itself won't. That's another way that we're able to get that information specifically on the counterfeit side. We do see some phishing attacks coming from social media. It's not extremely prevalent. Typically the conversations in social media around phishing are people talking about being phished and attacks that they've seen. So we use it as a detection mechanism, but it's not typically the start of where the phishing comes from. So I'd say counterfeit is probably the number one place that that's using social media to drive traffic.
Great. Also have another one about that. So do you also have takedown capabilities for social media impersonation accounts such as Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter? And I did have someone ask about sort of the difference between what Agari offers versus PhishLab. So if one of you wanted to speak to the email piece versus the online website takedown, but the question is, do you also have takedown capabilities for social media impersonation accounts such as Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and then also for rogue mobile apps?
So the short answer is yes. We do takedowns across all our service lines that we offer. The only one we do not do takedowns for is the dark web because we can't actually take anything off the dark web. That is only law enforcement that does that. But all other services that we offer, our mobile service, our social media takedowns, account takeovers, all of that, we do takedowns for across the board.
And as far as the difference between what Agari does and what PhishLabs does, PhishLabs, our primary focus is DRP with the items that we've been talking about as far as domain monitoring, detection, analysis and mitigation, social media, credential theft phishing attacks that target the customers of organizations, mobile app, dark web visibility, et cetera. We also do some enterprise targeted phishing protection as well, where we help with the analysis of employee received and reported emails. So it kind of a long story there how it came about, but it came out of the fact that we're experts in the phishing realm. More and more of our customers kept coming to us and saying, hey, what can you do about our enterprise targeted phishing? So we started taking in the phishing attacks that their employees were receiving years ago and started analyzing those and providing data back on those. And today we do that full scale. We do it for some of the largest organizations on the globe. And kind of do thousands and thousands of emails a day that are enterprise targeted. If we look at Agari, they focus solely on email protection with advanced phishing detection. So it's a capability that is typically layered on top of the frontline email gateway or even some of the leading email gateway defenses there. Whereas we layer on top of O365 or we layer on a third-party email gateway, and we focus on the advanced phishing tactics that are usually leveraging impersonation attacks. So very light layer there. We don't set in line. But we kind of analyze those emails that come through and get visibility and blocking into those. We can also help with DMARC enablement. So we help get an organization to reject with DMARC. DMARC is email authentication, and we are experts there. We actually were part of the founding crew with DMARC and have helped get some of the largest enterprise organizations to reject over the last couple decades, really. So,
great answer. And I did have a question about DMARC, asking, doesn't DMARC stop email spoofing?
So that's a great question. As I mentioned, you know, we not only sell it, but we're kind of helped create DMARC. So we're big proponents, but we'll be the first to admit it. You know, just like any other technology, it's not a silver bullet. It's not perfect. There's multiple things that can kind of come into play with DMARC there. First of all, it's got to be implemented and configured correctly by both the sender of the email as well as the receiver of the email. Now, we've seen a huge advancement in adoption over the last decade and really ramped up over the last 5 years, and we see that going forward. There's a lot of industry effort in the continual development and improvement of the standard. So it's here to stay, but it still comes down to organizations having that put in. It takes expertise to get it in and get it right, and having the receivers play along with that as well. Also, it doesn't apply to criminals that own the domain, whereas they own the email sending infrastructure. They can configure the DMARC themselves and kind of get that to play right. Also, if they're doesn't apply to compromised accounts, of course, right? So if the actor has access to someone's account, or you know, maybe even the DNS or another host that's related, and they can kind of piggyback on top of a legitimate sender, then it doesn't apply to that as well. So definitely a fundamental layer you need to have, but it's not going to totally, you know, kind of knock it out.
Great. And I think we have time for one more. So we have a couple questions about machine learning and AI and categorization. So what I think we're going to do is take those offline to our machine learning experts and get those answered. But we do have one I think we could answer, which is, what if the machine learning classifies something incorrectly? That's a little more straightforward.
Yeah, so that's a great question to ask. Ask yourself if you're kind of implementing machine learning, or ask any of your partners. Just like I said with DMARC, you know, no technology is 100%, and that's even for the most advanced technology. AI, ML is not going to be right 100% of the time. It should always be implemented in a supervised manner by experts, of course. So just like with many of the other enhancements and developments to your own kind of infrastructure and software and things of that nature, you kind of want to roll out machine learning in a development or testing environment and kind of let it operate, let it learn in a supervised environment, and then kind of tweak that until you get it to a trusted phase there. It also is typically, and best practice dictates, that it would be supplemented with traditional logic. So you'd have traditional logic driven controls in place that would provide boundaries. They would drive alerts, and they would also be used to kind of bring in relevant intelligence, right? So again, it's a layer. You're going to need still the traditional defenses of that logic and other specific, you know, threat specific intelligence and things of that nature. And then finally, ultimately, once you have it in place, you're going to want a way to monitor it and capture feedback, you know, from any end users it might affect. And a plan in place to kind of incorporate that feedback and tweak the model as it goes along.
Great, thank you. Well, I'm going to wrap this up, guys, by saying thank you so much. And for the attendees, please look for that domain impersonation report. It is coming out tomorrow. We'll have it on our website. We do have, I believe, a survey after this. You can request access to it. We will link to it in the email follow-up that we're sending as well. For any of you that want to download that report, we did just give you a sneak peek today. There's a little bit more in there, and it's going to be pretty interesting information. So thank you, everyone, for joining. We hope you have a wonderful day, and have a great rest of your day.